serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with Purple Heart recipient Roger Bain of Las Vegas, Nevada, a native of Rhinelander, Wisconsin. He survived World War II in Europe with the 30th Infantry Division.
Now, I believe when I asked you earlier how many times you were wounded, you said 2 times.
Yeah.
So what was the other one?
Just a minor wound, just a little scratch, I call it. Just draw much blood.
Well, and that's the thing. And I've talked to a lot of guys, and they take the same approach. They don't want to draw attention to it or make a big deal. But a minor scratch to you is probably pretty significant to a lot of people listening.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, some guys got banged up and patched. Just went to the medics and got a little patch on. And then after the war, then they said, well, for this and that, you get so many points towards going home.
Right.
Guy said, I should have turned this in.
Yeah, and I've had a lot of guys share that one of the reasons they didn't turn some things in is because they knew how much worse others had it.
Yeah, that's true.
And you probably saw a lot of that.
Yeah, and deprive other guys of more attention.
What was the hardest thing for you to deal with over there?
I don't know. Well, what can you say? You're 20 years old, every day goes by, you're always looking for something. To eat or, you know, find a figure way to scratch the extra food. I think if we had to count all the sea ration cans that was thrown out and over France, it'd be a hell of a pile. You can see where we went.
Mm-hmm.
Sea rations and K rations.
And you grew up in northern Wisconsin, which is plenty of cold and plenty of snow.
Yeah.
But what perspective did that give you on the weather during the Battle of the Bulge?
Well, I knew it. So I had 2 pair of stockings on, 2 pair of pants, 2 field jackets, and I had gloves on. I know how to keep myself warm. Oh, I was cold a lot of times. You know, you're standing or laying in a foxhole days at a time. Every day you're never inside.
Mm-hmm.
Once in a while you get inside.
Would you say it was about the same as northern Wisconsin, or was it worse?
I don't think it's any worse. We had 40-degree weather up there, too, you know.
Yeah, 40 below. But the deer and the rabbits and the partridges never shot back at you?
No, never shot back. I got hit once with a shotgun. The shot guy shot me with a
shotgun. You mean back home in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I was hunting. He seen a rabbit. I didn't, I guess he said. he shot at the rabbit. So it hit me. Not bad. Stung.
I imagine so.
Northern Wisconsin is, we're up in the woods. It's all woods. It was a logging country. It's like wilderness country.
So if you're in the Ardennes Forest, it's not all that different.
No. You go into Germany, we go to the wooded areas. I know what that was like. And the Belch had lots of woods. We had lots of woods. It didn't bother me.
Well, a couple other things that come to mind. You know, there are a couple things that you went through that for anybody in peacetime America, it's one thing, but you experienced in a very different situation. And I'm thinking about Christmas 1944 during the Battle of the Bulge. That must have felt a little different than a Christmas back home. You remember anything about that Christmas?
Yeah, we had bombers come over, bombed us.
German bombers dropped a few presents for you?
No, American bombers.
Your own bombers.
Yeah, medium bombers.
Because you were so close to the German lines.
It was in Melbourne. I think they made a mistake. Why don't you ask me about New Year's?
Yeah, I want to hear about that too, but tell me about Christmas. So American bombers are dropping bombs at your position.
They damaged the tower a little bit.
But they didn't kill any of your guys?
I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
Because I was on this hill in this steep bank going down, and the bomb lit on the bottom of that hill. And I was looking up at him, and I could see this thing go by. My eyes, bomb went off down the bottom of the hill.
Wow.
And I was like right back into my foxhole.
I'm sure I'd do the same thing. When it's Christmas Day and you're half a world away from home, freezing your tail off in combat, do you think of your mom and dad and your sister back home, or what occupies your mind?
Well, it's cold, miserable. I can't think of anything we got to eat special. Nothing special.
Mm-hmm. But you said, ask me about New Year's. What happened there?
Big fiasco. New Year's Eve, we went on patrol. Bright moonlight night. 2 platoon sergeants were scouts. Platoon sergeants, for next. Then there was me up in the front. Then I find out that we got to take, they took 40 men, picked the men out of the company. Well, I says, it'll be a pretty good thing here. And a section of light machine guns. I says, wait a minute, what's going on? I said, well, we're going to go on a raiding party. We're going to back some sort of, come several miles back and pick up some German officers, he said. Oh, that ain't bad. And he said, well, yeah, we're bringing out some litter bearers along, too. Ho-ho, I said, this is going to get kind of bad. So off we went, dark, it's a moonlight. And we was going along, and we got stopped. I laid down in the snow, and some German shot his rifle off right in my ear. I said, holy crap. And I kind of edged back, then the snow went under my field jacket. And two guides come back, were looking for him. I just couldn't see him. And I went, where the hell is he? I think he got up and run, hid, took off. Okay, so I started out again. We come to a hedgerow there, and four of us got across, and two Germans come walking up the trail. And a friend of mine, they called halt, and they turned around and runs. So here, two guys run after to capture them. They've got to take them back. You know, they got to let go back.
Right.
But they got away. So we went a little ways, and two guys says, get late. And the enemy says, you take that BR and run off a few rounds. And I said, oh, no. Oh, yeah. The guy said, well, this is getting too late.
And so you said no because you would have been making yourself a target.
No, making a lot of noise.
Uh-huh.
I wanted peace and quiet. No, I said, I ain't going to shoot. And they said, yeah, I guess you're right. The lead turned around and everybody turned around behind it. Didn't, they went out back first and they just looped around and got back at daylight. The only shot was fired where I was. And they said, well, tomorrow night we're going out again. Oh, I says, God, this is terrible. Snowstorm come up and the big snowflakes come down and they called it off.
And you weren't disappointed one bit?
Not one bit.
So when you're talking about the German firing right next to you, so, I mean, he was close enough that he could have killed you if he saw you?
If he was shooting at me or somebody behind me, he didn't hit nobody.
Uh-huh. But he was awfully close.
Yeah, he's right there. I mean, he was close. And I couldn't, I was kind of down low, and I couldn't see him. And, of course, it's wooded.
Yeah. I mean, just hearing you describe it, it sounds like a situation where every nerve in your body is on edge.
Oh, yeah. I said, where the hell is he, you know? What a fiasco that was.
Sounds like you're fortunate to come back alive from that.
Oh, yeah. 13 days later, the war really took place. And
well, the other day I was curious about, just because of the uniqueness of where you were and how you experienced it, come April of 45, the end of the war is getting close, but you had your birthday over there.
Just another day.
Did you even recognize when your birthday came around?
I don't think I ever recognized my birthday.
Those things don't matter quite as much when it's life and death.
You didn't have no calendar.
You know, I'm curious, when you describe that patrol and some of these other situations you're in, was there something that you look back on now, you say, I survived because of this, or I was able to handle it and endure what I went through because of XYZ? Were there some things that helped you get through it?
Yeah, I think it's luck. It's all luck. I had so many close calls that, like in Germany, I was taking this town, this long, narrow town. It took us a couple of days to take it. I went upstairs in this brick house, and this nice glass cupboard. And I looked at it, and I said, shall I smash it? I said, no, it's a pretty nice piece of furniture. But any time this guy looked out the window down the street, looked down the street, and he went downstairs. And I left, and I just stepped in the other room, and a German tanker see that, the guy look out the window, and he shot that into that building where that nice cupboard was. Blew it across the room and smashed it all to pieces. And that just that second, I stepped into the other room.
Wow.
Missed me. If I'd been sitting there looking at that, it'd have done me in.
And I'm looking at some pictures of some people who wouldn't have been born if you had lingered.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at another picture, a wedding picture of you and your wife, Grace. Did you meet before the war, during the war, or after the war?
After the war. A friend of mine got married, her sister, and I stood up for him, and I met her. Hi, kiddo. How'd I say? Yeah. didn't mean nothing to me. I had lots of other things to do. You know, a guy, here I am with a brand new 1947 Chevrolet 5-passenger coupe, red, with everything on it.
Ooh.
Hell of a price. $1,465. I was cruising, man. Anyway, I forgot about her. Two other guys and I stepped out the tavern door. Grace was just right there walking by. Hi there, I says. I said, the guys, I want to walk this girl home. She'd lived block or so away from where I lived. That's the way it took up together after that. But if she wouldn't have been there, I'd never met her.
How about that? You had 63 years of marriage with her and three kids and your grandkids. So you chalking that one up to luck, too?
Yeah, it's all luck. Here I am, putting her 95. I got a great-granddaughter going to college in California. Here I am.
Hey, what about VE Day? When you heard the Germans had surrendered, was that a big deal? Did that mean something to you?
Well, I'm glad it's over with. We could quit.
Yeah.
Of course, then we went into police action. You know, we went and all spread out and went. I think I went to Rotorist, Germany. And that's the first time we lowered the flag. Our company. And I and this Sergeant Strasburg, we folded the flag when it come down. That's the first time in my life ever done that. Kind of got to me.
What it represented?
But I was just a kid. But it kind of got to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Never thought much of it. But we hung out down there. We went into Camp Lucky Strike's Tent City. Took a little boat across the channel to England.
That whole time you were over there fighting this German army, were you ever aware of the concentration camps and the conditions that these Jews and other political prisoners?
Oh, yeah. I seen the people. I never got into the camps, but I was seen the people.
You saw some of those who had been liberated?
Yeah.
What did they look like?
Pretty sorry-looking people.
You could tell they'd been starving?
Oh, yeah. There was nothing but skin and bones. Three or four of us guys took a train back of displaced persons. Mm-hmm. As all, put them in boxcars into France.
So that gave you a picture of the impact of what you'd done over there.
Yeah, how you could treat people the way they did.
Well, what was it like to come home again, to get back from the war? You told me about your parents surprising you.
Well, I want to tell you about my trip home.
Well, let's hear it.
Come back on the Queen Mary. Big deal, you know.
Deluxe accommodations?
Yeah, deluxe by a foot. 15,000 of us on it. Then I was in the middle of the ocean, and it word came out that the Japanese surrendered. We was relieved, because we knew if the Japs were going to keep fighting, that's where we was going to go.
Yeah. So was there a little celebration with 15,000 on that ship?
No, when we hit the harbors, it was a celebration.
Did you come into New York or where?
Yeah, New York. Yeah, come past the Liberty.
What was that like, to see that statue and think about what it represented?
Pretty good. Felt pretty good to get home. Oh, you're going to have steak. But a sorry steak. Thinner and thin and thin. And I picked it up with a fork and looked at it, and I folded it up and threw it in the garbage. I went and got ice cream. Yeah, that's the sorriest steak I ever seen in my life.
Was it difficult? Was it challenging to get used to life as a civilian again after the way you'd been living for all that time?
Well, I come home, ain't good. My mother, he's a great cook. He's cooking me all the time. I'd come out, the government pays us $20 a week for 52 weeks. We call it the 52 Club. So I joined that. Went down the tavern and played whiskey tonk with the guys. We'd mortgage the first drink, see who paid for it. That went on for a couple of weeks. I says, I gotta go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to work.
You weren't the 5220, you were the 220, huh?
5220, and I got 2 or 3 weeks of it. I went to work.
And you spent your entire career in that business, huh?
Yeah, 44 years in the trade. I worked everything from telephone booths to atomic energy plants. I was, of course, just sword of secrecy and all that stuff. I was Q-cleared, and I could go anywhere I wanted.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you. I also don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for helping us understand a little bit of it. I know that you had an experience more recently with Honor Flight of Southern Nevada. You and your daughter, who lives down the street, got to go with a bunch of other veterans to Washington, D.C., to see the World War II Memorial and other sites there. What was that like? What did you get out of it?
Quite an experience. We all had to go in wheelchairs, see?
Mm-hmm.
So it comes to the First World War Memorial. It was off to the side. I got out of a wheelchair and walked up some steps, and I walked over to be in the center. I could look right down on the Washington Monument and everything. oblique. That. Right there, I can see another guy marched back and forth, the guard.
Oh, at Arlington National Cemetery, man?
Yeah. I watched him spitting potash, boy. I tell you, he marched back and forth, picked the turns. Then he changed the guard for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the sergeant come out, and he says, "I want complete silence, all the people. Nothing was said." Well, I thought of my dad. That's a memorial for him, you know. But it was fun. And, of course, I'm standing there, and here come two people down each side of me. They come with our people that are taking care of us, stood on each side of me, so I wouldn't fall. But I was in pretty good shape at the time.
But the emotions that you're feeling right now, thinking back on that moment at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, you were feeling those emotions then?
Yeah, for my dad.
And that your dad could have been the unknown soldier. You could have been the unknown soldier.
Yeah. But he was, you know, those fellows, you know, we had a lot of them too, you know, a lot of men.
Well, yeah.
Battle of the Bulge, I think 16,000 men was killed.
Well, and in the whole war, 406,000 Americans. And I don't want to suggest anything or put thoughts in your head, but I'm just curious if during that time at the World War II Memorial, when you realize that that wall there is honoring 406,000 guys like you who didn't get to come home.
Yeah.
Do you think about some of the men that you knew who were killed in action?
Yeah. I think of a lot. I know, remember a few names, too.
And is there any thought of, that could have been me? Or why wasn't it me?
Oh, yeah. I wasn't at that exact spot. Your luck. Yeah, your bullets fly by, you hit trees and that, you see them, but you keep on going. You're just a dumb kid.
So with that honor flight experience, what was the most meaningful part of all of it for you?
Just to see that place. It's something that you don't realize, you know, how big it is, that memorial. You got treated so well. Police car in the front, the police behind us, sirens going. 28 miles of sirens, pushing that traffic aside. Cops pushed their cars aside. I sat in the front of the bus, got a perfect seat.
Well, they only do that for really important people.
Yeah, we felt like the president. When you see the president going, well, that's just like we did.
When you think back on it, almost 95 years old now, is there something that you'd say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
To make it through, I guess. Take it as it comes, you know. I raised stock cars, 38 Ford coupe, and I had a 42 Mercury coupe. I rolled one over and rolled it over and landed on the wheels and got stayed right in the race.
Now that sounds like luck.
That was luck.
And all kidding aside with that, again, not wanting to suggest something that isn't there, but when you say that your survival in World War II, you're meeting your wife, all these things, that it amounts to luck.
Luck is all it is.
So there's no thought on your mind, hey, somebody or something was protecting me in that situation?
I think so, yes. I believe good Lord is looking after me at the same time. I call it luck.
You just understand it could have been a lot different.
Hell yeah. I could have made a misstep somewhere.
Aren't we glad he didn't? Roger Bain, 94 years old of Las Vegas, Nevada. Big thanks to Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for connecting me to Roger. Speaking of Honor Flight, you may have heard the news that in light of the coronavirus pandemic, all Honor Flights across the country have been suspended until at least April 30th. I hope you'll remember to continue supporting those groups. There are still so many deserving veterans who have not yet had the chance that Roger had to visit their memorials in Washington, D.C. You'll find photos and a short video of Roger online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. But we're out of time on the radio today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.